Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Bad End Podcast. It's episode 26. I, for some reason, thought we were a lot deeper into this podcast. Like, when I heard that number, I was like, that doesn't sound right, but...
Just getting started.
Yeah. I'm Katie McCarthy, writer for USGamer.net. I've also been a freelancer in the past, and as always, I'm joined by my lovely co-hosts.
My name is Josh Calixto. I'm a writer currently for Kotaku.com.
And I'm Kyle Cookstell, and I'm tired.
You're tired?
That's my bio.
How was your Memorial Day weekend?
It's tiring.
Same.
I spent like 4 hours at a Macy's trying to buy a couch.
Were you like just napping?
I tried really hard.
We were trying
to like give them money to like buy the couch, and like their systems went down, and everybody was like, I don't know, it's just not working. So that was hell.
That sucks.
A New York Macy's.
Like, it just took it out of me. This was like a little north. It was like outside the city.
Okay.
But still unacceptable.
Macy's.
Yeah, you need Macy's bucks.
I went to San Diego to visit family, and I went to the San Diego Zoo for the first time since I was probably like 4 years old. That zoo's crazy. It's like Disneyland, but a zoo.
Yeah.
It's like pretty
dope.
Yeah,
it's like the most famous zoo, right?
Yeah. It's like, well, they're like known for like conservation efforts and stuff. And I just watched Rampage recently, and I was like, oh, this is where Rampage starts, because The Rock works at the San Diego Zoo, and I was, like, very excited about that. But it's cool. I saw, like, a polar bear up close. They're very big. They're, like, humongous.
What's a polar bear doing in San Diego?
They have, like, fake snow there. They, like, make snow for
it. I don't know if he was part of, like, the biopharma startup scene.
He was, like, scratching his back on a big rock, and I was like, I love this polar bear. He's so big, and he's just chilling, you know?
My sister came over, and I was not able to play video games, which is unfortunate because I like to play video games. This is a video game podcast. But before that, I did play some video games before this Memorial Day weekend.
You played video
games? I played some games,
y'all.
No way. And I want to talk about one of them because this shit... Y'all, have you guys heard of House Flipper, first of all?
I have heard of it.
Is this how you guys...
I think I've...
On another podcast.
I've seen it like... I can't tell if it's, like, more than a meme, you know? Like, if it's, like, a throwaway Steam game that someone released for, like, $2. But it sounds like there's some, like, next-level nuance going on.
Okay, so...
So, paint the
reason why I want to talk about this game is because I had,
what's
like,
it called?
House Flipper. As in, right. Like, when you flip houses for real estate. You know, you buy a fixer-upper. The concept is you buy a fixer-upper, you fix the house, you sell it for a profit, essentially. That's just how property works, I guess. I don't know much about it. I used to help, my dad flip some houses when I was a kid. So I have some experience working in that scene. But this is a totally different ball game, y'all. I saw this. Sometimes I like to browse just like the top Steam games, just to, what are the kids playing, you know, what's new? Because that's how I found out about PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, like before people were writing about it and shit like that. Like, you just trust the Steam ranks and you're good. So House Flipper, it's up there right now, in case y'all didn't know. And I didn't really know what to expect of this game, but I had, you know, like three separate existential crises while playing this game so far. It's that kind of game. So the first of which is, so the game, first off, you're not even flipping houses. You're doing jobs for people who need their house cleaned, who need their house, like, they need the tiling redone, or they need, like, new paneling on the walls or some shit, or they need, like, a washing machine installed. So you just, like, go to their houses and do that. And so literally the gameplay is you're like painting a wall, or you're just cleaning up debris off the floor for people who need it. So my first existential crisis with this game was like, I'm 3 hours deep, right? Like on my first session. And I'm just like spending 5 minutes painting a wall. And then three other rooms need to be painted. So when all's said and done, I've spent 20 minutes painting walls inside a video game. So
is there anything going on? Like, can you like sync your Spotify into the game or something?
I mean, I would just play Spotify like manually.
Okay. I can see that being relaxing, you know? You're just like Like, when I was playing Happy Home Designer, or like, even like Style Savvy or like Love Nikki on my phone, I feel like those games are just like, I just like tune everything out, and it's just like weirdly satisfying to like create outfits or like interior design stuff. Cause it's like, there's no win state in this game, there's no lose state. I'm just like getting shit done, essentially. So
the game has this weird like red herring thing too, where it looks like it might have some like sinister bent to it. Like, oh, maybe this is going to turn out like to be like some Doki Doki Literature Club type shit, where it's like they bait and switch and it's like a horror game or something like that.
Definitely, the screenshots definitely look like it's got like, it looks like the house at the very end of Mother. Yeah. Like everything is like torn down. And it's like, paint this wall. And I'm like waiting for somebody to like pop out.
Maybe someone will like kill a baby or whatever.
Yeah. Someone's like blood. It's like paint this blood sacrifice.
Yeah. Cause it's weird. Cause like you'll have like, you'll get a job from someone. It's like, oh, I had some teenagers stay in my house and they like ruined it. Like, these college kids, and like, can you just go clean it up? And you go, and it looks like something out of Condemned Criminal Origins. Like, there's just like stains everywhere, trash all over the floor, and it's like
kind of a party.
It's creepy, dude. And sometimes, like, you'll go and you're like cleaning up the house at nighttime, so like you have to use a flashlight, and it's like, all right, there's something going on here. Not to mention, there's like a bomb shelter DLC where it's like people ask you to clean up like bomb shelters for them because they're preparing for like the apocalypse. So I don't know, like it feels like there might be some weird story stuff going on, but it's like a bait and switch. So you end up painting walls for 20 minutes in a game that doesn't seem to actually have like a horror story behind it. Like they kind of make you think it might at the beginning. So I was starting to think like, why am I wasting my time doing this? Okay, so that's where the second existential crisis comes in, which is I stopped playing it, and then I started playing Wizard of Legend, which it's just like another roguelike. It's another game that came out this week. It's been getting a lot of buzz. I don't really see what the big deal about it is. Maybe we could talk about the game another time, but I was like, I kind of want to play House Flipper again. So I turn off Wizard of Legend and I turn on House Flipper again, and I'm like, why am I coming back to this game? Why am I appreciating or enjoying this game? So I started thinking about it in my head, trying to reason with myself, essentially, to try to come up with some line of rationale for why I might be enjoying this. And then I started thinking, well, you know, when I think about it, it's like I'm playing Halo or like a first-person shooter, because it's a first-person game where I have to click on things. I have to aim at like a thing, click on it, coordinate, and then click on something else in order to achieve the desired effect, which then feeds into my like receptors in my brain, which then send some sort of like endorphins into my body that make me want to keep on playing, because it's like hitting the pleasure centers because I clicked on a certain section of the screen and then clicked on another section of the screen and then did all these things in sequence in a way that makes me feel good, which then led to my third and final existential crisis, which is, why do I actually enjoy any game? Like, if House Flipper is like the same as me playing Halo, like, couldn't this just literally be anything? Like, you could put anything in front of me and I'm gonna fucking enjoy it, because when I think about it, it's just the same thing. I'm just looking at different pictures. I'm just doing a different action. There's just like a different skin on top of it, but I'm doing the same shit. I'm getting the same pleasure out of it. And it's like, why do I even enjoy these games? You know? So I think there's something deeply nihilistic about a game like House Flipper, which essentially reskins like a first person game in a way that is just mundane. And there's like no excuse for why this should be in your life. You know, video games, they put all these layers on top of it where it's like, we're going to talk about Detroit Become Human, where it's like all these aspiring things. But the other day, you're just kind of like clicking buttons to make yourself feel good or to like see more of the story.
You're clicking some buttons in that game.
You're clicking shit and you're like, oh, this is going to make me feel good later down the line because I'm going to reveal more of the story or because I'm going to get experience points or blah, 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 blah. But yeah, it's just but something about that draws me in, you know, like something about peeling it down and like being like, look, this is what video games are, you sick fuck. It's just you painting a fucking house. Or it's just like you like Clicker Heroes or whatever, that game where it's just like
I don't click.
And you're just like leveling up a character, and it's just, it's an RPG, except literally all you do is click one part of the screen. It's just disgusting and nihilistic, but also fascinating because that's the same. I'm sure there's like BOGOS article about this somewhere that
they're weird. Like I play a lot of clickers on my phone, or I used to at least, and they're just like weirdly satisfying. Like, you know, like Clicker Heroes is like more, I feel like, interesting because it puts it in like, here's a JRPG format, and I think the second one isn't even going to be free to play. It's like going to be paid. Like you buy the game, which is weird, but they're like, yeah, we're against microtransactions, blah blah blah. Wow. Like, you know, try, they're like doing something new. But like, so I'm wondering if there's gonna be something more to the sequel. But yeah, it's really, I don't know, like the clickers are weird. And then obviously there's what's that, paper, is it just Paperclips? Universal Paperclips, is that right?
Yeah, Universal Paperclips.
Played all that one.
Yeah. The Flance joint.
Yeah, and that one's really interesting too.
Theoretically, it's like House Flipper has its thing where, like, you know, I flipped a house where I did it myself. I saw it was a mess. I was like, I'm learning a little bit about house flipping. I'm like, oh, make sure you plaster over any holes in the walls. Make sure that all the molding is right. Make sure you got like your radiators installed. And I'm like learning how to install toilets, showers, various fixtures in houses. So I guess that's like kind of useful in some ways. But at the end of the day, it does feel very nihilistic in a way that makes me question myself.
Are there any win or fail states, or is it just like at your leisure? Like, do you get like a reward for successfully flipping a house, or do you like, if you lose, do you get a consequence in any way?
No, you just try to like get the most money for the house, because it'll show like bidders where they're like, oh, I like these things in my house. Like, I only want one bedroom, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, if you fulfill their expectations, like, you'll get more money or less money, depending. I don't know what happens when you run out of money. I guess, like...
Yeah, I was like, what happens? What do you use the money on? Buying the houses?
Yeah, then you buy more houses.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you flip.
And then you flip and make more money.
I mean, I think the end game in, like, a real house flipper situation is you eventually, like, get to the point where you don't have to flip houses anymore, which would just defeat the purpose of the game. So I guess you would just do this forever, which is kind of depressing in and of itself, right? Because the whole point of the game is that you're just flipping houses to an end game that even in real life doesn't exist, because you don't want to be flipping houses for the rest of your life this way. Eventually, you want to get into the real estate market to the point where you're not actually doing the manual labor involved. Maybe you're hiring your own contractors or something to do that stuff for you. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe at the end of this game, you research ways to get out of house flipping. And then you start your own business.
House, you on Google?
You get in the bomb shelter.
Yeah, exactly.
You're on Indeed.
Yeah.
The other question is, like, it's also, like, why this game now? It's, like, what of the, what, like, forces of reality have pushed House Flip Simulator into the fucking top
What's
charts?
What's the age
Steam?
Of Trump angle?
House yeah, Flipper yeah. I think it's Trump. Like, it's like millennial wish fulfillment simulator. It's like, no, you can get a real job and make money. Or I feel like it has something to do with, like, there's some line to be drawn between the like current fascination with like escape rooms and the idea that you can just like break tons of shit. But it's like, it's, so it's kind of like that, but because you're doing a lot of the same sort of things, but then you're like put like a little bit of a narrative on top of it. That's not just like, get out of this room. It's like, no, get out of this room and make it look nicer and then make some money and then get in a bigger room and do it again.
Yeah, there is like a kind of weirdly educational value to this. Like I started thinking, like, how much could I scrape out? I could like probably do some house flipping right now. Like if I bought a little, sum in like North Dakota or something, flipped it, how much money could I scrape off the top?
You know, that's the end game, is they want players to be inspired to do their own house flipping.
This is like
America's
Army
company.
America's Army for Property Brothers.
Oh, God. Dude, that's it. They've got you, too.
I saw...
Like, Century 21's going to give you a call and be like, yo, you want to come sell houses?
Speaking of, like, Army, I was seeing some movie recently, and you know how they do those, like, pre-movie trailers or commercials or whatever? They had one for the Army that just, like, straight up looked like a video game. Like, it was, like, very much marketed, like, a Call of Duty thing. It was weird. It made me feel really uncomfortable. And I was like, this is horrible. And people go into the Army, maybe, like, young people, like, kids that don't know any better. They're probably like, yeah, it's gonna be, like, Call of Duty, but it's like, and you might die, and your friends might die, and it's like a horrible thing.
Whenever I see shit like that, I'm like, have these people never seen, like, satire or, like, social commentary before?
Have they never seen, like, even, like, Band of Brothers, where it's, like, super depressing? It shows, like, the bad side of war. I mean, all war is bad, but, you know what I mean.
Hmm. Well, I mean, House Flipper, yeah, we can move on to something else. It was just making me think about, you know, why. And I think the moment you start asking yourself why with video games, you're kind of in for a bad time. And so maybe that's what I have to say.
Maybe you got to stop playing.
Don't House never Flipper question now. Your habit.
Yes. Which I think might lead us pretty naturally into Katie, the game that you played.
Yeah, so I've been playing Detroit Become Human, which is the latest dream from Quantic Dream / David Cage, the Hideo David Kojima of like cinematic video games. It's really bad, but it's very entertaining. Like, I'm like having a good time with it because I'm not taking it seriously at all. And I feel like that's kind of the key to it. It's been getting a lot. It's pretty controversial because it has like a pretty horrible like. I feel like it's like positioning. It's like a game about androids. You're playing as three androids. There's Kara. There's Connor, who's like a cop / narc type horrible android person. And then there's Marcus, who's like Android Jesus. And it's basically like imagines like this future where people they make androids so androids can do all the jobs that people don't want to do, but then it's caused like huge unemployment because now there's like not enough jobs because androids are just doing like janitor work and construction work and like all the jobs that are like dangerous or like shady for people to have, which is like a weird, I mean, it's like an interesting premise, I guess, but it's like
they're taking all our jobs.
Yeah, it's like, but it doesn't really engage with that idea that much from what I've played so far. And there's like a lot of parallels that just make me like cringe. Like, man, that one of the first shots is like a bunch of androids at the back of a bus, and it's like, oh, okay, they're doing this.
God,
like,
that's so fucking dumb, dude.
It's really bad, to be perfectly honest. But the moment. I was like, you know what? I enjoyed Heavy Rain which is one of Quantic Dream's last games. Heavy Rain is like a crime or like a murder mystery kidnap thriller type thing. It's also a not great game, but it's also very funny. Like, the acting is like super corny. The like decisions you could make are very ridiculous, and it's just like it's like a fun ride, you know? It's like, this is like, and then I think the mystery was actually like really compelling, in like a stupid way. And I feel like I'm getting that same enjoyment out of Detroit so far. Is like, I feel like the setups for each characters are actually pretty good. Like, I feel like I was like, oh, I like want to learn more about this like android guy, like Marcus, who's like awakens at one point and like basically breaks against his programming. He's basically like a android helper to this like famous artist. And he's just, like, touched by art, which I think is really funny. There's, like, a great scene where the artist guy is like, come on, like, paint something. And then you get these props that is, like, identity. Press X to identity. And it's like, wow, this is really stupid.
Damn.
And then,
sounds
yeah,
deep
Kara,
as fuck.
It's, like, really not. And then, like, Kara is, like, a very maternal and, like, kind of just develops, like, maternal instinct towards the child she cares for against, like, her abusive dad. And it's like,
God, this sounds corny as fuck, dude.
It's so corny.
It's like the Crash of androids.
Oh my god. No, it really is. Like, it's like,
that's like every David Cage game is just like Crash.
I saw this tweet that was like, frame this game as a joke. It was like David Cage asking, what if racism was real?
It's literally like, and there's like no, there's so many lines that are just like tone deaf, like so tone deaf. God, and it's like, it's really entertaining just like as like a train wreck in motion. Like, I feel like the problem with Quantic Dream's last game, Beyond Two Souls, was that it was just boring. Like, it was like not even entertaining in the slightest. It was just like so boring, and I just didn't care about Ellen Page's character or the like ghost thing that she was like fused with or whatever the hell was going on.
What about Willem Dafoe?
I don't remember Willem Dafoe in that game. I didn't remember he was in that game until I saw screenshots of it recently, and I was like, oh yeah, Willem Dafoe was in that game. That's weird. Yeah,
Willem was there.
He was just there, hanging out. But yeah, like, at least Detroit is entertaining because it's stupid. It's pretty much just, like, imagining every social problem in, like, civil rights history, but it's like, what if androids instead? And that's, like, the whole game. It's, like, and...
Yeah, what is, like, what's, like, the core story of, like, this game? Because in Heavy Rain's, like, your kid's gone, and yeah. Beyond Two Souls is like, you're Ellen Page! Like,
you're Ellen Page, that's the whole game. What's the... well, there's like What's that ghost thing, right? Conceit. I don't remember. It was like some supernatural element to it. And then she was homeless at one point. I don't remember anything about that game. And that game's long, too. And I'm hoping, because I'm not done with Detroit yet. I've heard it's like pretty short, like 10 or so hours. And so I'm like probably about 3/4 of the way there. But yeah, basically like the plot is like Kara and Marcus are two androids. Like separate from one another, but yeah, they pretty much like they awaken against their programming, and it's like it's usually through like an emotional moment. Like for Marcus's character, it's like his like father figure artist dude is like in peril, so he just kind of has this like moment where he's like, I gotta like make my own decisions to get out of the situation. And for Kara, it's like, I have to protect like this girl I'm taking care of, well, and like fight the abuse of dad or whatever. So it's like, and this isn't just them two either. And then the third android, Connor, is a cop whose job is to take out other deviant androids. Deviants when they like
Blade Runners against their... Is he a Blade Runner?
Basically
Blade Runners.
He's basically a Blade Runner. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, he's basically a Blade Runner.
This sounds so like the fucking worst shit ever.
It is, but it's really funny. But yeah, so he's basically a Blade Runner. He's basically shit. Deckard. But yeah, it's a lot. And it's very funny.
Do you think if you play Janelle Monáe's The Arc Android backwards while playing Detroit Become Human,
there will be
some kind of like
some parallels?
Probably. Yeah.
Damn. Josh, dude.
You think they make pieces to one another? Maybe her new album, Dirty Computer? Great companion pieces.
I think if you play Okay Computer backwards at 3x speed, you might see something.
3x speed. If you play it backwards on vinyl, just...
What yeah. songs could people listen to instead of playing Detroit Become Human? Because I think I would recommend Janelle Monáe's Oh Maker. Great song about the relationship between androids and the people who make them.
You just listen to Chief Keef over and over.
Yeah. DJ PayPal.
You're listening to,
DJ PayPal.
New...
DJ PayPal. Some death grips.
Do the androids make music?
Marcus can play piano.
Oh, so there's not like, they don't have like weird like android music.
No, there's a funny scene where he plays piano and then there's like those magical notes that suddenly appear in front of him. And I couldn't tell if that was like in the android's head or if that was the piano.
It's an interface, it is the future.
It was weird. It was just like, oh wow, he's just playing those notes. And you're just like tapping on the touchpad on the PS4 controller, which I thought was really funny. So I was just like holding it, like tapping the touchpad, and it's like, this is weird. Also, there's like a fight scene where you're just like shaking the controller, and I threw it across the room a little bit.
Well, like, you haven't finished,
you should have Wiimoted it.
What?
You haven't finished the game?
No, so I don't know like where the plot's going, but right now it's kind of like... Everyone's, you know, it's just like this, there's like this revolution happening basically, and it's like how these androids are all dealing with it in separate ways. Marcus is kind of like a leader guy, and it's just, and Connor's just like working with a detective to hunt them down.
So I have some inside info from people who have finished the game, because I was saying,
do they become human?
We'll have to find out.
Whoa. Fuck. They become human?
But the thing that bugged me about
such a dumb, that's such a dumb name. Yeah, oh my god.
I don't know why it just wasn't called Detroit. Like, why did it have to become DBC. Human on it? Just
it's like no one in Detroit is human, but now with the advent of robots. It's
especially what like playing this game while watching Westworld, which also is like not great. I almost think this might even be better than Westworld. Like, no, actually Westworld kind of does some interesting things. But it's still, like, not... I feel like Detroit has the entertaining aspect, whereas I feel like Westworld's not even entertaining. It's just, like, why am I watching this every week?
Well, the thing that I hate about Quantic Dream's other games is that, like, at the ending, it's just... It's not even a fucking ending. It's just, like, here's the product of the stuff that you did.
And there's just all your choices.
No, yeah, and it's just, like, they just pasted ending 4... 10 and 11, like those are the ending parts you got, and then they just play them in sequence where it's like the way that they're stitched together isn't even like subtle. It's just like, okay, so you made these four decisions which lead you to get this part of the ending, and then they play it, and then it like fades to black, and then like it fades up to like the next part of the ending that you got, and it just like clearly plays them all in sequence, where I think like the ending I got to Heavy Rain, like it didn't even make sense, like, sequentially. Like, it was showing me shit, like, out of order. like, what the fuck is this shit?
I will say that formula does seem a little bit better in Detroit. And it made me, like, bummed in a way. Because I was like, man, why isn't Sony giving this money to, like, an actual good, like, like a good, like, Twine game maker or something? Because, like... What Detroit does, like, contrary to past games, is at the end of each chapter, you're shown this big-ass flow chart, and you can see the flow chart anytime on the menu, too, so you can see, like, the different branches that a story or scene can go. Mm-hmm. And if you're not happy with your outcome, you can just go to the main menu, load it back up, and just play through from a certain checkpoint again if you want to change a certain decision or something. Mm-hmm. Which makes it a lot easier, because there have been, like, a couple times where I'm like, wow, I messed up big time. That dude's dead. I should probably go back and like redo that.
It's still all like quick time events, right? It's still like press square now.
Not as much. Like there are some, but I feel like they might be a little more forgiving, or maybe I'm just better with them. And they're not that frequent. It's not like, oh, I'm shaking a glass of orange juice type things. You know, it's like, or yeah. I'm in a chase scene and I have to press square to jump over this like box or whatever. It doesn't seem to have a lot of that so far, but I'm also like not done with the game, so that could ramp up at the end with some chase sequences or something.
There should be a scene where you have to like rock a baby, and it's like, oh, yeah. You have the controller and you rock it back and forth.
That's just,
and you're like a, that's, and Yakuza like, what if you're 6? Like an android?
Have you played Yakuza 6? You have to do that, literally in that.
You yeah. rock a baby?
That's great.
Yeah.
Why the Japanese are superior developers and game makers to the French.
But like, no, Josh, like in this game though, it'd be important because like you're an android, but you're holding a human baby. So you're like, oh, like am I
motherhood?
Am I human? Mm-hmm. Because like I feel
maternal instincts.
I don't know.
Because you're mm-hmm. that'd be you big. Rocking that'd the be controller big. Would be an interesting parallel to the android rocking a child, our relationship That's to the good. Machine versus their relationship to That would be fucking subversive as fuck, David Cage. Come on, next game.
Hire me.
All right, let's tag
Detroit become human again.
Cleveland become become more human.
San Francisco become
Why human. Does he feel the need You're to like, put this in a U.S.
Texas
city?
Texas become conservative.
Why do they feel the need to put these in... Yeah, Texas become...
I want, like, Rust you Belt. Know, like, Sufjan's, like, 50-state plan for albums? I want that for
I'm
Detroit.
Still waiting. 48 more states, Sufjan, where
he
you
gave
at?
Up on that a long time ago.
No, he,
guys,
I think
on.
He said that was a gimmick. Like, he literally yeah. said, like, I never planned to do that.
But why does he have to put this shit in the U.S.? Like, these...
Honestly, I'm surprised. Like, Detroit... I first thought Detroit was, like, a weird choice, but isn't Detroit, like, the automotive capital?
Yeah, I mean, that's, or, like, that's Motown, yeah. dude.
Okay, that's probably why it's Detroit,
The
then.
Pistons.
Probably, like, you know?
Still, I mean, it's, like... They say, write what you know. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I don't think David Cage knows...
I don't think he knows America.
America racism.
Or people.
It's like
I don't think he knows any non-white people.
Three billboards, dude. That movie was just utter butthole.
Oh, God. I forgot that movie existed.
It's that same thing, dude. Ugh.
God, what? Yeah.
Another parallel.
That movie's bad. That movie's worse than Detroit.
It's not off topic.
Because that movie got, like, critical praise for some reason, and it's baffling. It is fucking baffling. That movie's
the same way,
like, a lifetime
movie. I read that Detroit is, like, knocked off Daddy Simulator 2018 from, like, top PS4 charts. Like, people are buying this fucking
God of
game.
War, you're saying.
No, they're buying Detroit.
No, you're saying it's knocked off God of War.
Yeah. I know, there's a lot of dad games that came out.
It's weird because I feel like so many games, like, market these, like, we gotta go with the gritty approach, or we gotta be, like, a first-person shooter or whatever, and, like, we can't go the full walking simulator way of, like, indie games and stuff, because, like, that's not what, like, players want from, like, a AAA thing. But I feel like the success of Detroit proves that, like, people don't just want, like, the same shit all the time. Like, they want, like, different types of experiences.
Yeah, that's true.
Even if they're controversial, and even if they, like, might not be as narratively sound as, like, you know, like, a great Twine game or something, you know?
That's a very good point, Katie, and I have thought this way with, like, a lot of times, because I know a lot of just random ass people who have Heavy Rain. Like,
yeah,
it's just
Heavy Rain was, like, I think one of the best selling PS3 games. Yeah. Like, I think that's why Sony keeps giving him money. It's like, he made one good game. Like,
my roommate, okay, literally, it's so, like, on the shelf, there's like GTA 4, FIFA, and fucking Heavy Skyrim. Rain. Not even Skyrim, dude. It's just FIFA, Heavy Rain. Like, why is Heavy Rain here, dude? It's just, there's
like
a
my
scene
partner
where you're
doesn't
brushing
even like
your teeth, dude.
My partner doesn't like video games really. Like, he likes Nintendo games, and that's, like, really it. And then he likes Heavy Rain. It's, like, that's literally, like, a weird thing. Like, I don't get it. But that's, like, a thing.
It occupies this space of, like, a drama thriller game that there haven't really been any, like, Heavy Rain clones. You know, like, and I feel like if that was a genre that, like, actual competent writers decided to start committing resources to, and maybe the only reason why David Cage has resources is because, like, he just so happened to fucking break through with one of these things, then maybe we would have, like, a really interesting genre of video games going on, where instead, I feel like what's happened is we have, like, our Mass Effects and Skyrims and Witcher 3s that kind of put that over this layer of, like, RPG storytelling shit, but, like, you have to have that gameplay layer there for it to work. But I think you're right, Katie, that, like, Heavy Rain kind of does demonstrate that you don't necessarily need that layer for it to work. I just wish that people realize that and would, like, put resources into that kind of thing, because I don't want it to just be walking simulators. You're right. I know it's a reductive term. We've talked about this on the show, but as a shortcut to talk about that kind of game that I'm referring to, it would be nice if we had something like Heavy Rain that was actually good, you know?
I think what sucks is, like, Until Dawn was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was, like, a really good riff on, like, slasher movies and stuff. And it was, like, super entertaining. I think the writing was, like, good for, like, what it was, which is, like, a teen slasher type thing. Like, it was, like, really campy and fun, and it, like, embraced that element of it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was probably the best version of, like, a David Cage, like, game. But that team hasn't... They've been making, like, VR games. They made one... Like, it was called Hidden Agenda, and it was like you played with your friends on your phone, like a Jackbox game, but it was using the same.
I played that.
It was, like, fine, but it was only fun because I was playing with friends. It wasn't fun with the writing, or, like, it didn't feel as, like, entertaining as Until Dawn was. And I don't think it sold that well either. I think it kind of flopped, which is kind of a bummer. So I don't know. It's, like, a weird thing where, like, there's also, like, that pedigree with, like, David Cage. Which is kind of ridiculous because I don't understand why he has pedigree.
I mean, I think the other thing of it that is, like, I think not to be discounted is the fact that the mechanical barrier to entry on these games is super low. So it's not like, it's like The Witcher is, like, a great story, but you've, like, got to be good at, like, a third person game and, like, know what an inventory is, know how to do stuff. Whereas, like, Heavy Rain is a game, and, like, all the David Cage-esque games are, like, it's like, here you can experience this great interactive narrative. And, like, I think also, like, a lot of people that like think about video games, like imagine they're kind of like that and probably are more disappointed to find they're like The Witcher or something, where they're like, oh, I go in and press buttons and make a story happen. It's like kind of like a crazy offshoot of like the FMV trajectory to some degree, where you don't have to be like good at playing a video game to like beat Beyond or whatever the fuck it's called, Detroit. And I think that's also why you have like a crazy diverse audience that's attracted to this stuff, because it's not, it like, it doesn't need, there's not some huge overhead of just learning how to play the game. It's just, you can get in there, as long as you can like look at your controller and be like, oh, that button is that button, and you press it, you like get it. I think it's also like, it's similar, it feels like a little bit to like the what adventure games used to be to some degree. Like, it was like, there's less puzzle solving and like Quantic Dream stuff, but like adventure games were kind of like similar, where you could just experience like a really easy story and you just like point and clicked and moved. And so there wasn't like, oh, like right now it's weird because games that are like have like all the budgets, like Mass Effect or like with The Witcher or whatever the hell else, like Skyrim, it's like those games also have like a huge mechanical barrier. Whereas this is like a different idea of like, oh, what if like anybody could play this game and like could do something, and you don't have to like worry about first person controls. Like, I even like Firewatch is kind of like not this, whereas this is like you move around, you see your person, you're in a story, and you can just experience it. You don't have to worry, like, you could, this could be the only game you ever play and be like, oh, cool, it's like an interactive movie.
And they also have a difficulty option that like lessens, like, I'm assuming like QTEs and stuff. Like, I'm playing on
level,
which I thought was like, I don't know, I don't remember past games having that. I wouldn't be surprised if they actually do, but I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, even for like a narrative driven game where there's really no skill involved except for like thinking about choices you're making in a timely manner, it's like, oh, okay, like literally anyone can play this. Like, and I think that is appealing for people that see that, like, I've seen so many commercials and shit for this game. Like,
yeah, so many commercials.
I was watching like the Warriors game last night, and it was like there were like 20 commercials for Detroit, and I was like, that seems kind of weird for this audience, but I guess whatever. But when you think about it, it's a Sony exclusive, big budget, like, I guess it makes sense.
Also, like, David Cage is like the perfect marketing, where it's just like this foolish, idiotic aspiration. Where it's like, you're never, it's like the Molyneux thing of like, you're never gonna accomplish what you want to accomplish, dude. But like, at the same time, he's going for it. Like, he wants to make art, and it's kind of laughable because, you know, this guy is never gonna make something good. But it's, there's something about it that's like, makes you want to cheer for this guy and wants you to like see him succeed. And you want to play the game that is like aspiring to this, because like, maybe this will actually happen.
This is the one.
But I think there's this issue that people like David Cage have, where they see the video game medium as like, it's like this red herring for like what they have to do to take advantage of the medium, which is he's doubled down on like this giving you a thousand options thing without ever really stopping to ask like if that's the way you should do it. You know, just because a book has 1,000 pages and you want to have like a choose your own adventure book doesn't mean it should have 1,000 endings. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe make 2 good endings, or maybe make 1 fucking good ending. Who knows? I don't know. I think a game like this would be much better if it was just limited to like a smaller scale Law and Order type thing. Like, let the people enjoy the mystery, let them enjoy like a little bit of social commentary that doesn't have like a quote message, like the SVU type thing, you know, where like sometimes they'd come a little hard of like showing the like realities of what crime ends up playing out like. But damn, that could be like dope to see in a game. Like, if it works out a certain way, maybe it's a commentary on something or comes through with something, but it doesn't have to be like trying to say something about racism or like, you know,
or sexism or everything,
or like the working class, who know, like, I don't know. It's just because you're not going to do that. David Cage, my dude, you're not going to say anything worthwhile about this shit. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of disappointing. Like, I wish it wasn't so on the nose. It just feels so like tacky, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, if they just like got away from that and just tried to make like a fun Android science fiction thing, it, without like all these very on the nose parallels. Like, even like, I mean, you can't really avoid making that sort of commentary with those sorts of narratives, but it's like when you're going so on the nose about it and then treating it like it's like you're the first person doing this, it's a little bit like, come on, man.
Yeah, it's just kind of a bummer that like you think about this fantasy as like of Twine. If it was like a fully fleshed, if you could have a Twine game that was fully fleshed out, it had all of the resources behind it to make it into a thing, into a Sony budget, and then it's actually is in David Cage's hands, and it's just like,
yeah, it's like it's a cool, like it's a bummer because I feel like this structure is finally at like a cool point, like with this new like flowchart stuff and be able to like hop around at your leisure. Like I think that's like a great idea, and I hope for some reason, I hope somehow this like inspires some up and coming person who like gets a good break or something, maybe at a smaller scale. But like I feel like these sorts of cinematic narrative driven games, not like visual novels or Twine stuff per se, but like I hope there's more of this type of thing in the future, because I do think they're cool and they're super entertaining if they're done right, and I'd love to see like in a good writer's hands. Like, I think that would be really cool.
It would be dope if like Sony was like, we're releasing like this engine for like storytelling, and we just like use David Cage's game, and he's like opening this up to developers who are interested in making these types of experiences, blah blah blah. I don't know how ignorant of a statement that is, or how realistic that would be in real life to actually create an engine out of something like that. But if there was some way that they could like make this model more approachable for people, the way that like Unreal does for a lot of people who want to make specific types of games, like that would be super dope.
Anyway,
I think we're ready to take a break. We'll be
take a break
back. So we got some reader mail. We got two of them to be exact. One of them, let's start with this one here from Stefan K. Stefan. One of those should probably be right, I'm imagining. The email says, "Dear Bad End, I am that 10%. Hear me out. Laurel is the..." Okay, I'll stop. That was a Laurel Yanni joke, which...
that
is like a week ago.
That was a meme. That was a meme.
That meme went real fast.
I honestly, that whole thing happened, I still don't understand where it was from. I feel like it had a shorter life cycle than like the dress thing from forever ago.
Yeah, it did.
It was just like a few days of like everyone talking about that, and then I just like nothing since.
It was like it was supposed to be like the new dress. It was like hyped as being new dress, but yeah, I don't know. Okay, let's go.
That's such a crazy thing. Like, in a pre 2018 world, that would have inspired so many think pieces. And then
I think we're too hardened
by the world.
We're starting to get kind of over think pieces. Like, I'm starting to see people speak on subjects with a little bit more nuance, which gives me like some sort of hope in my heart. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. Okay.
We'll see.
I'm emailing you folks today to talk about PUBG, Fortnite, and DayZ. Lots of conversations compare Fortnite and PUBG, including your number 23 podcast. And I just wanted chime in a little bit. I was a... Did I say something wrong?
No, just number 23 was a good ep.
Great ep. I was a huge DayZ fan of the modded Arma 2 variety. We don't talk about the standalone. And now I'm a big Fortnite fan. I hate the art style. I hate all the publicity. I heard an NPR piece about it yesterday. Groan. But I would argue that the game works better as a Battle Royale style game than PUBG does. I think PUBG works better at distilling what DayZ provided, a scary, unpredictable, vehicularly chaotic survival co-op game when players become bored with DayZ's lack of an endgame and noteworthy map events, PUBG's Circle and Battle Royale Spin become the natural evolution. They were both mods at the same time, but I feel like DayZ was sort of the father of PUBG. Fortnite isn't more noteworthy than PUBG. PUBG gives far more interesting experiences. But when people talk about competitive games, and especially the whole esports stuff, games need a degree of mechanical consistency. PUBG is jank as fuck. I think that's why Fortnite is the better battle royale game, and also why it has exploded in the way it has. It should be no surprise then that Ninja was a former Halo pro, because Halo is a mechanically reliable game, albeit being bland from an experience standpoint. Do you folks agree? Do you think PUBG is going to fall to the wayside as more mechanically refined battle royale games are announced? Do you think the DayZ and PUBG kind of experience will come back? What will PUBG need to do in order to stay fresh? And I think we know new maps aren't going to work. Love the podcast. Best, Stefan. Thank you, Stefan.
I feel like the PUBG staying around thing is like an interesting thing, because like I feel like it's proven that the new maps thing has only made things arguably worse. Like I feel like they got like so much like blowback with Miramar that they've slowly edited Miramar to be more like Erangel, the first map, which I feel like has made the experience less interesting to me, because I liked how different that desert map was at first, and now it's like, well, we added more roads and more buildings, we basically just made it more like the other map, which I think is kind of dumb and stupid. And the new map is like just like smaller, and that's pretty much like the big difference. But it's like, I guess that kind of speaks to Bread and Green's roots, which with like Arma, and I think it was mostly Arma where he did like a bunch of different maps and different modes and whatnot for the Battle Royale mods that he would do. So I feel like he's still just kind of following what he's always done. But I feel like what PUBG needs to do to like stay in the zeitgeist is like
they need to sue. They need to sue.
They need to sue Epic Games, like they're doing Epic right now. Yeah. I mean,
sorry, Katie.
You guys, I have some great news.
Yeah.
I have some great news.
What is it?
They're doing that. They're suing.
What? The siren's outside because it's happening.
Who knew? That's crazy.
Well, that was a crazy coincidence that the siren just went by. I hope
first step.
That was listeners the lawyers can hear that. Epic. Yeah. Rushing that was.
Yeah, there's like, wee-wee.
I think the thing is like, this has been my point from the start, is that PUBG doesn't like have anything on top of the core Battle Royale formula that differentiates it from just like any sort of like generic Battle Royale game, besides like the creator is behind the project, and I can't think of anything else that's like, I don't know what elevates it beyond just the core formula. Yeah. And I think that's been its biggest issue, because Fortnite has building, and I don't know if I necessarily agree. Like PUBG, I totally agree, is jank as fuck, and I think that Fortnite is more stable, but I think that I don't see that as being like a massive blocker. I think it's basically that I think people don't, it's like something about like just the way you play Fortnite versus the way you play PUBG makes Fortnite feel like it has a higher skill ceiling, because you can at least like take a few hits, so you can like get better and you can figure out ways of like mitigating damage, where in PUBG is like if you get seen, you're dead, and then hopefully you can shoot somebody in the meantime. But then when you add on the layer of building and stuff, the game feels like it's a lot more dynamic, whereas PUBG is just like someone could whip up like a really simple besides the networking stuff, like Battle Royale game inside of like whatever the hell game engine, and be like, this is basically PUBG. I've got a third person camera, I've got some like generic guns, and I've got a big map, and I've made PUBG. And I think that's why you're starting to see these other people doing these new sorts of games, because they've got like a lot more like game design talent behind them, who are like thinking about the actual problems of like what is an issue with the actual Battle Royale formula and how can we fix that. And that's been my critique with PUBG like from near the start, where it's like they'll do these updates and it's like, oh, we added two new guns in a car, and it's like, dude, you're not even thinking about like what is like, you're not even trying to improve the Battle Royale formula. You think you've got it and you're just doing it. And you see these other people come in and just making the game bigger and better. And like they're doing it. And I think now he's like trying to fucking sue Epic, because he's like, you stole my idea. And they're like, I don't know, man, like maybe, but our game is different enough that people are playing this, and you can't copyright the idea of like a circle getting smaller. So
there's a lot of aspects that contribute to why Fortnite is more popular, obviously. I think The first of which is that it's free to play. I think the second of which is that it's on like every fucking platform. And I think the third of which is that it runs smoothly. And I think those are all equally important. I don't know if it's 100% that like people actually care about like the building as much. Like the building is like a cool hook for kids who were like into Minecraft and stuff. And it's like, hey, Minecraft plus shooter equals theoretically a game that I want to get into. And then that became like word of mouth of people like, hey, have you played Fortnite? And then it became like the meme fad thing that everybody is just into and playing. And I think all those things work in tandem. I don't think people care about esports, honestly. I think that Fortnite is without a doubt the more approachable esports game and the more obvious to me esports candidate. But I don't think that's that important. And I honestly, Kyle, I can't say for certain whether like the amount that Epic is updating Fortnite is what is making it more popular than PUBG, because I don't think that that is what is happening here. I agree with you.
I don't think I said that. I just meant that. I meant the idea that like someone could like very like it. You could like scaffold up like a very simple battle royale game pretty easily. Whereas like doing like adding sort of any sort of other systems on top of that, like a building system, is more difficult. So the idea that like PUBG as a thing is like, it feels like the lowest barrier to make a battle royale, and that other companies are just doing stuff on top of that.
Sure. No, and I think like it's really cool. Personally, what I think it's been really interesting to see how Epic is like, how can we complicate this formula? And what's crazy to me about it is that they don't even seem like they know what they're doing as far as like, this is what a battle royale game should look like. They're just like, let's add a fucking jetpack. Let's add guided rockets. Let's just do this thing for fun, which I think that spirit of like this, let's make this like a sort of fun, adventurous world where we're like, constantly adding something, new things to experiment with and mess around with. That keeps it fresh, but their dedication to the kind of like opposite thing that PUBG has strived for, which is this like very serious realism with like a couple of goofy notes to it, but that for the most part takes itself seriously, that makes PUBG a lot more rigid, which I think the format for Fortnite, because it is more just fun and it's more like child friendly and more cartoonish, it leaves it more flexible to like experiment and do more fun things without it going against the grain of like what you would expect out of this game, which like keeps it fresh for people, and I think is why it will definitely have more longevity than PUBG. But PUBG is still going to have its core base of players who just prefer the gunplay, and that's kind of me. I'm probably going to play more Fortnite over time, but I prefer the shooting in PUBG.
Personally. Yeah, I can't help but like, I might be totally off base with this, but like drawing a comparison with this whole Fortnite versus PUBG versus every battle royale thing with like what we've seen like MOBAs, like I feel like if anything, PUBG, I feel like it's kind of like the Dota 2 in this space where it's like it has its dedicated audience, but it's also like a drastically smaller audience than say like League of Legends or whatever. And it's like more, I guess, like a pure experience in a way. Like, I can see how someone could see Fortnite being a better battle royale experience, but I feel like PUBG gets to the roots of that experience, which is just like listening for sound and being cautious and stealthy and like just shooting when you see movement or whatever. Like, I feel like that's like a pure experience and more interesting experience than just like, I'm just gonna build a wall when someone's shooting at me or whatever, you know?
But I think it's also, that's like, I mean, one interpretation of the formula.
That's up for debate.
Because also there's like, I just saw a game today whose name I totally forget that was on Rock, Paper, Shotgun, but it's like a new battle royale game, but it's like totally fucking crazy Mad Max, like post-apocalyptic game. And you can like drive around cars and the cars have like, they have fuel and the cars can break apart. And you can like bolt on shit to your cars and like drive around and you can put rockets on your cars so you can like jump over rocks. And it's like that sounds tight. Like I don't know why the battle royale formula is limited to what PUBG is doing. And I'm stoked to, like, I think the formula itself is like a great idea. It's like put like, you know, 100 people on an island, make the island get smaller and like give them tools to like survive. I think that just that sort of scenario doesn't necessitate a game like PUBG, and there's a lot of things you can do inside that, which is also why I think that like this lawsuit's going to go nowhere, because it's, I don't know what you can actually copyright about this thing. But I'm excited to see people like kind of tease out and say like, what are the actual bounds of like battle royale? Like what makes a, like PUBG is big right now, but like, I would not be surprised if another battle royale game comes out that's not PUBG and not Fortnite, that's like way bigger than both, and we've never even heard of it yet.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think like a lot of this stuff, it comes down to just like taste and opinion. I don't think there's like any like objectively better game. I personally think that Fortnite maybe takes a little more skill, mechanics.
Yeah, I feel like Fortnite's like more like hairy from the get-go, you know, or harried, whereas PUBG you can hide, and if you're lucky you can get in like the top 10, which I also kind of like that random like luck type thing with it, whereas I feel like if you get like the top 10 of Fortnite, you have to have some skills to, if you're gonna make it to the top 5 or even like number 1, like you have to know what you're doing. There's no real like hiding in that game unless you're just like very lucky and find like a good tree,
and I think,
or
like,
a place to build a base.
That's another cool thing about the game too, is that like when you see Ninja doing his thing, you're like, damn, it's like, it's like watching a really good skateboarder. And like with Shroud, you get like sort of the same thing where it's like, damn, this guy's really good at aiming. But with Ninja, there's like, there's a little bit more of a like a like a pageantry, or just like there's, it's a lot flashier when he does stuff, just because the game gives you a lot more opportunities to show off your skill in a way that's like very clear mechanical prowess way. And a lot of video games don't translate that very well, you know. When you see Ninja doing his thing, like it looks like he's doing dope shit, like when you're watching LeBron James dunk over like a 7 foot tall dude, you know. Like it has that level of visual, it translates really well from the screen, and I think like that's part of what makes Fortnite cool. Thank you, Stefan, again for that email. We're gonna go to the next one, which again didn't really have much of a question, but maybe we will. This will spin off some conversation. This one is from Steven S. About a month ago, I finally decided to buckle in and mainline The Witcher 3's main questline after 3 years of play. I mostly did this because I had begun reading The Witcher novels and really enjoyed the characterizations and how the game matched them. I especially liked how it handled the various endings. I thought the idea of having the ending tied to smaller decisions spread out over a longer period of time was smart, especially how it was centered around whether or not you spend time with Ciri, support her, and let her do what she wants. I liked it more than the obvious choices in Mass Effect or other games featuring moral decisions whose importance is pretty telegraphed beforehand. This actually ties pretty well, I think, to our Detroit Become Human conversation a little bit earlier, and like the way that endings kind of play out in games that have multiple endings and like decisions that you can kind of make. I kind of like The Witcher in that respect, that it's like, it's not like this all or nothing. The entire game is going to change for you depending on like what ending you get. Like it, things will change significantly, but it, like, it's not like going to frame the entire game in a different way depending on what ending you get, you know, like it's just going to be slightly different. There might be a slightly different takeaway, but there still will be something to take from the game if you get the good ending or the bad ending, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say with like Witcher 3 in particular, is I like how a lot of the choices you make, which are mostly just like dialogue things, they don't feel like they're split down like a binary, you know. It's like it feel like some of them feel like moral choices, and it's like, well, should I throw this baby in an oven even because this guy told me it would be okay, or this girl told me it would be okay? It's like there's like weird things where it's like, it makes me uncomfortable in like a weird way. And there's like a lot of choices like that, that have like effects like down the line and whatnot. And I think that's what makes that game resonate more than I think a lot of like choice-driven games, where like, I think even what I've experienced with Detroit so far, it's like good or bad. Like there's like literal like good cop, bad cop situations. It's like, do you want to put the pressure on, or are you going to like be sympathetic and stuff like that. And it's like very much split down this binary of evil and good. And I feel like that's like, I mean, while it can be entertaining, I do think it's like way less interesting compared to like some games. Like I recently played Forgotten Anne, which I think I did. I talk about that on the last podcast? I feel like I did, or maybe I didn't get a chance to.
I think you talked about it. I don't think you talked about it.
Oh, I didn't? Okay. Well, Forgotten Anne is this adventure game I reviewed earlier this month. It's published under Square Enix Collective. I think it's like a Danish game from Danish developers. It's like very heavily anime inspired. It's like very light platforming. The platform is kind of the worst part of it. But what I liked about it is a lot, it's a very choice driven type game. But it, again, like doesn't do like a binary, like evil or good. It's like a lot of like, I'd have to sit there and think about my choices I was making. I was like, I don't know what to do in this scenario. Like, both these situations seem, like, really bad. Like, both these outcomes don't seem good. And the game does a good job of, like, setting up all the characters and the world and everything. And I feel like I'm always more attached to a game when the choices I'm making feel like they have more weight and they aren't just, like, okay, how am I going to sleep with this person, like, in Mass Effect?
I actually wrote an article about this back in the day for Killscreen, which is one of the things that I really liked about Witcher 3, is that there's some quest lines where when you do them, it doesn't actually like have a yield that you're expecting. Like where you're, this one quest with Rosa Varatra, that is the character's name, it looks like it's going to play out as if it's like a romance line, except you do all this stuff, you hang out with her, you're like gonna give her a fencing lesson, and it's like this kind of suggestive, like you guys are gonna hook up for sure. But then like you do it, and then the quest line ends, and then it's just over. She kind of leaves, you know, cold. You know, it turns out like she and Geralt break things off like in not very good way. They never are romantically involved with one another, but that's just kind of the way it works out sometimes. And I think having those moments where you don't get the expected results that like a video game might usually give you, it's like very powerful for adding weight to the decisions that you make. Because I find that with a lot of these video games, I end up wanting to know, like, is this the canonical ending? You know, like, is this the right thing that should have happened? Because the other one, like, I always feel like shit when I get the ending that's clearly not canon. And what I like about The Witcher is that like both endings, or like all the endings, kind of feel like they could be canon, or like what happens at the end is just like how it worked out, and you're still learning the same things from like what happened over the course of the game. And it's not like the lesson of this game that you should be taking based on the way that it ended is this thing, you know, which I feel like is a lot of how storytelling traditionally takes place. But with a game like this, with The Witcher specifically, like, you don't have to do that. You can have that weight sort of dispersed over the course of the game, and like the lessons that you learn and the messages that it's trying to feed you are fed over the course of like a longer period of time. And that's something that I think that the game is very good at doing. And it does so by not making every decision like a black or white. There are always stakes. There's always a result. There's always something that you expect that always is like pleasing to what you want to come out of this situation. And I think that to me is like what The Witcher 3 does really well. I mean, on top of it all being really well written, especially like in comparison to other video games, I don't think there's any real parallel out there to what The Witcher 3 does.
But I think at the same time though, it's like, it's weird that like so many of these like games that have like a lot of like big decisions in them that it feels like, for a lot of them, they kind of like filter down to, like you were saying, like getting the specific ending. And part of me was like, I haven't played The Witcher 3. It's like a failing of my personal being. But like something like The Witcher 2 was interesting because you can make a lot of decisions along the way that affect your kind of your like how you move towards this ending. But I get the sense that like, I think there's a few endings in that, but they're still mostly static. So instead of having like all these choices in a game like Mass Effect style, like Paragon or Bad or whatever the other one was, it's like, it's weird that all of them have to build up to like choose your ending versus like being a thing where just the decisions you make along the way like affect what you're encountering and how you're moving throughout the world, so that when you get an ending, it's just a natural offshoot of what you've already been doing. It's not like, hey, it's not like Quantic Dream style where you reach the end and it like checks four different flags and then based on what you did, it like does a specific thing. I feel like it'd be better. I don't know how much The Witcher 3 does this, but like having a thing where maybe all the games have like the same ending no matter what you do, and that's like fine. But the choices you make along the way can put you on like different kind of places that like help you get there. So how you receive an ending is different versus just like how what you're doing inside the game itself determining like the specific ending you get. It's like, it's, I guess my point is that it feels like a lot of like choice in games is very like end facing. It doesn't consider like the present reality of like playing the game. So it'd be cooler if games did stuff more where they kind of altered your current state.
There's this other layer of like decision making as just something to enrich the idea of character, right? Like,
right,
maybe
exactly.
You just select an answer and he says a certain thing that doesn't have any outcome whatsoever. I feel like The Walking Dead and like Telltale games would do this kind of thing, which maybe Telltale games are like the kind of drama David Cage-esque games formula that we were talking about before.
Yeah, I guess that's true, yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Just sort of decisions as a thing that doesn't have to yield something down the line as just, hey, like, depending on what I say here, it's just giving me a little bit more personal investment into this character because I feel like I am interacting and I have a stake in, like, how they act in this situation, which doesn't necessarily yield a drastically different product, but helps me to feel like the decisions that this character is making are also mine because like I have a role, I have a hand in like shaping this character to the extent that they can be molded in this world. And I think it's cool that like, I think The Witcher 3 is successful at that, which I think is what Steven here is partially saying, in that the importance of the decisions is like not quote telegraphed beforehand, because like I think there's a lot of situations in The Witcher 3 where the decisions you're making aren't even important, and it tells you like, and there's like pretty direct feedback of like your choice actually didn't really matter, but it doesn't, you don't really care because like you still made these choices and it still colors the way that you see the character, which I think is, it has value in and of itself. Like Twine games, like a lot of the time, you're just kind of clicking on something and it's, you're not getting a different.
It's also how like you play, it's like what you do in like if you're DMing a D&D campaign or something where it's like you can give your players like five different choices or something, and then really like all those doors lead to the exact same spot, but the thought that there's so much potential behind them is what makes the thing interesting. And I feel like the idea that like every door has to have unique content behind it is a kind of like a specifically like gamery sort of thing that probably rose out of like, I don't know, some bullshit or something that makes people think that like, oh, like I'm not going to play the game six times, but like there better as hell be a fucking thing behind that door that's not the thing that I went into. So I think that games could probably do better, like do more with like not make like giving you more choice, but like more like pseudo empty choice, I guess you would call it, where everything has the same idea, but like you're influencing how you perceive your own character in a certain way. So
I think it was like the opposite. I think like the Mass Effect 3 is the worst case scenario where people feel like every choice they made was going to have a door at the end of it. Like there was going to be 1,000 different endings that were like all tailored to what they did in like the first game, into the second game, into the third game. But then it was like, wait, it's like you got one of three colors at the end, and that was like the only thing. So I think that kind of the way that they like it was kind of played up as like a, they actually subverted your expectations for what you think fate. And I think that just read as bullshit to a lot of people, partially including me. Like, it's kind of a cop out to be like, actually, we were subverting your expectations of our selling points of this game the entire time. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's like some violation of my rights as a consumer, but it is a little bit of a cop out. Like, come on, y'all. Like, y'all just, y'all just didn't have the resources to do, like, to make the ending as ambitious as, like, you thought it was going to be, and your project didn't work out the way it did. And you know what? That's okay. That's okay, you guys.
Sounds sometimes like the end of, like, Neon Genesis Evangelion, which is, like, they ran out of budget, but congratulations.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
And then they got money, and...
And they did it.
End of Evangelion happened, and...
They need to release an end of Mass Effect 3.
So it's never going to happen. I've just accepted that's just, like, dead in the water somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like, that dude's done so much. Like, he did voice acting for The Wind Rises, the Miyazaki movie. He was the main guy in that. He's actually a pretty good voice actor. Like, I have no idea if he's done other stuff. But I was like, damn, he's like...
Wow.
Anno's pretty good. Who would have thought? And then he did Shin Godzilla, which is really good. Really good live action movie. Japan's doing a new Godzilla cinematic universe thing, and apparently Shin Godzilla is not a part of that. So I'm assuming if he was going to do Shin Godzilla 2, that is no longer happening. So it's like, he has time to do a new Evangelion movie to close out that rebuild series, but who knows if Anno, he's going to fucking pull it out.
Hell yeah. End of Mass Effect 3. Looking forward to it.
I actually think the rebuild, the third rebuild movie was like controversial. Like, people really didn't like it because it was very different. I was pretty into it. I thought it was interesting. I don't know. It was fine.
Well, thank you to our readers for those emails. If you want to have your email and thoughts featured on Bad End Podcast for us to discuss, please send us an email at badendpod@gmail.com. To wrap things up, unless anybody else has anything to add, we are...
Does it?
I was going to say, go BTS. They got number one at Billboard.
BTS fighting. Yeah.
BTS.
Let's go. Number one. We're going to... Find us at the Grammys later this year, armies. Any armies here? It's going to happen. And when that when that day comes, I'm going to flip. I'm like...
That's gonna be fucking crazy.
I am
crazy.
Going to flip. Like,
Josh is gonna like just start a K-pop podcast. Just the start that hype train.
How have I not started a K-pop podcast yet?
Honestly, I would start one with
what
you. Let's do it, Josh.
Oh my god. Holy shit! You're right. Okay.
Dude,
anyway,
yeah, let's do it.
We are Bad End Podcast. Thanks so much for listening again. Please tell all of your friends that you listen to this like podcast, and it's pretty dope, and it's called Bad End, and it's on Twitter at Bad End Podcast. There's an email out there that's at badendpod@gmail.com. The hosts are really cool. You can rate us and review us on iTunes to help us. And besides that, yeah, just reach out on Twitter or whatever. And we will see you in a couple weeks. Later.
Bye.
Peace.